Good morning. Can you folks back there hear okay? Thank you. Give me a sign if you can't, okay? So on the front of your program this morning is a small selection of a larger verse from Jalaluddin Rumi, the great Persian, the great Islamic, the great Sufi mystic from the 13th century. A lot of you know his name now, and I've certainly spoken about a lot of his stuff over the years. So what we have there is a small verse that I thought we would recite together. So if you have it in front of you, you can join in. If you are sitting next to somebody who has it, perhaps you can share. And if you don't have one or access to one, you can just listen. But let's say this together. Once we have tied ourselves to selflessness, we will be delivered from selfhood and released from the teeth of 100 snares. We were born of the rays of God's majesty and have won the grace of heaven. How long will we suffer at the hands of things that do not exist? So return to the root of our own selves. So that's what I'd like to talk about today. That's my jumping off place. This is a verse that we use for sitting with sutras, that retreat that we do usually 3-4 times a year. This is a passage we've used in that retreat for a number of years now, and the Sitting with Sutras retreat is about sitting with a verse and picking out a word or phrase in that verse that for you has some sort of energy. It's Lectio Divina, sacred reading, a way of sitting with Scripture in a way that we can contact it personally. Does that make sense? It's a different way of kind of reading and sitting with something. They call it reading for transformation, as opposed to reading for information. So it's a different way of encountering the symbols on the page. It's a different way of encountering the written word, right? So I like to use this one because we usually do 4 readings in the course of a Sitting with Sutras retreat, and usually the first 3 of those are from Buddhist scripture. But I usually like, when I'm choosing those readings, to end with something that is not from Buddhist literature, to show us that we can sit with any type of writing in this same kind of contemplative way, right? Kind of transformative way. And I think it's really important, as somebody who self-identifies as Buddhist, to acknowledge and to realize that truth shows up in forms that I wouldn't normally describe or label as Buddhist. It's good for me to realize that the Dharma is not limited to Buddhism. That to me feels really helpful. In fact, it's really good for me to know and to be reminded that the Dharma is not limited to language, right? That the Dharma is not even limited to human expression. That the Dharma is boundless, right? Otherwise, I have a version of Dharma that's too small. You know, if I think it's only human expression, and if I think it's only Buddhism, and if I think it's only... So I like to throw in passages from other sacred scripture, poetry, something like that, to show people that there's ways of encountering their experience that can point them to something that's really true about their lives, but isn't necessarily limited the way we usually think of, you know, Buddhist scripture. So I like this passage. What it reminds me of is there's a number of passages in our Zen tradition that refer to the practice of Zazen, or the practice of meditation, as turning the light to shine within. Turning the focus of attention in. We go in. So we have that lovely stanza from the Song of the Grassroots Hermitage. Turn the light to shine within, and just return. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. We are the source, right? We can't face ourselves, nor can we turn away from ourselves. Right? What I love about this metaphor is when we turn the light to shine within, we are the light. We are the light, and we are what's being shown upon. Do you get it? You can't disown either one of those. Mind watches mind. Heart feels heart. You can't pretend you're only one of those two things. You have to be both. You have to be both. Wow. The other thing I like about that, turn the light to shine within, is not only are we being identified with light, we are being identified with consciousness. We are being identified with awareness itself. But we are choosing to do something with it. We're choosing to direct it. And where are we directing it? In. What I hear a lot, I hear this a lot, especially in spiritual circles, reach for the light. Reach for the light. Do you get what's underneath that? Do you feel what's underneath that? You're not that. But if you get far enough away from the dark, maybe you'll get to the good thing that you are not. Do you get the subtlety there? Do you get the subtle misunderstanding there? Reach for the light. That somehow there's a goal and it's not you. And maybe the further away you get from yourself, the better you're going to feel. Right? Disown the dark. Do you kind of get that? Turn the light to shine within and just return is an entirely different teaching. And that's what Rumi is talking about here today, I think. Rumi, like everybody, belongs to all of us. So you get to read this and think it sounds like a recipe for pumpkin pie. Good for you. What it says to me is, return to the root of the root. And I know where that is, because it's not outside of me. Return to the root of the root. Go all the way in. Go all the way down. So I use this at Sitting with Sutras, as I said sometimes. I didn't this last time around because there's a lot of folks who repeat that retreat multiple times, and I don't want them to think I'm stuck in a rut, so I like to choose different readings. But I want to give just a minute here of airtime to honor the rut. There's a lot to be said for the rut. The reason this verse is on my radar at all is because this was one of the chants we did at the House of Prayer when I sat with the Christian contemplative community up in Loring Park, the House of Prayer. We chanted this before every sitting for a year. That was just the chant. So you chant it together. And they do a pitch rise and fall. It's more of the Benedictine style. But you chant this for a year, and after a year of sitting with something, it kind of starts working on you. You know? So I'm giving a little airtime to the power of chanting practice, because I think it's profound. And I'm certainly giving some airtime here to the spirit of repetition. Don't read this in 30 seconds and think you got it, right? If you sit with this for 30 seconds and you don't get it, that's way better. And then sit with it for another year and really, really, really don't get it. That is what I endorse. But this thing worked on me for about a year, and then they have a repeating cycle. Well, every 3 years they circle back to it. So I sat with this for a long, long time. And I could feel in my heart. So this is again me, now I'm speaking from me. I could feel in my heart the disconnect between some of what he is saying and my own felt experience. Right? So he would be, because he's a Sufi, it's part of the Islamic tradition, he has Allah, he has God. And he is saying from his own personal experience, anybody who's read Rumi knows this guy is not writing from his head. He is writing from a profound awakening. This guy is on fire. If you've read Rumi, you know he is somebody who is living on fire, right? We have won the grace of heaven. You are born of the rays of God's majesty. When I read those words on the page from Rumi, I can feel that he is in that place, and that for him is lived truth. That's his experience. He knows that. I had that same feeling when I'm reading Dogen. I have that same feeling when I'm reading Hakuin and him saying, you're Buddha. You can't not be this. You're Buddha the way ice by nature is water. They're writing and expressing from a place of knowing that. Not understanding it conceptually, but living in that place, right? So I'm reading this on the page, and I can feel Rumi is talking to me from that place. But I also can feel in my heart, I don't feel it. Do you feel the power of the line, you are born of the rays of God's majesty? How long are you going to suffer at the hands of things that don't exist? I sat with this every week for a year, and I could feel this guy was telling me something really, really true that was totally alien to my experience. Because the stuff that I was suffering from felt real. I intellectually knew it didn't exist, right? Because lofty spiritual teachers like Rumi told me they didn't exist. And I know on some level he's saying, you're Buddha. You were born this way. This is the nature of reality itself. It's the nature of your shin, your heart, your mind. This is what you are. I knew he was right up here, but I couldn't feel it. I couldn't feel it. So every time we got to that part, I could just feel the speed bump. Clunk, clunk. In my heart as I went, I know you're telling me the truth, but I can't feel it. I can't get to it. I can't feel it. I can't get to it. Right? Do you guys have that same response sometimes to poetry or scripture or somebody you know they're telling you the truth and some part of you gets it, but it's not showing up in my life. It's not showing up in my life. Wow. I'm so grateful that I chanted this for that long of a time so I could see how deeply it went. Because I feel the disconnect in those lines, and I bet you anything he knows, I do. Of course he does. Just like Hakuin said, you know, you're Buddha, you know that, right? I know you think you're ice, but you're water. It's the same thing. You get it, right? And he knows his students don't understand. He knows those monks don't get it. He has to tell the truth anyway, but he knows they're not going to get it until they do something. And so the instruction is return to the root of the root. Go all the way in. Go all the way down. I know you want to reach for the light. You want to go up, and you want to go out where it's light, and that feels good. And you want to be far away from the part of you that doesn't believe, and you want to be far away from the part of you that hurts. And the instruction is, your freedom is here. Back down, back down, back down. All the way in, all the way down. That's what we do with the light. You shine it on the dark. You shine it within. That's what you do. Come back. Right? If you want to realize the undying, don't separate from the skin bag. Right? Come back. Right here. There's your vast inconceivable source. Wow. Drop by drop, this verse wore at the stones of my fear. It is not done dripping on the stones of my fear. Water can wear away a mountain, we know that. We also know we don't get to see it. We just get to see a mountain and we get to see the rainfall. It takes a very long time. But that's okay, there's no hurry. There's no hurry. So when things are growing, because this is our metaphor, this is Rumi's metaphor, he's talking about growing things, that's why he says roots. This is our roots. We know plants have to extend roots, they gotta go down before they can go up. If they go up before they go down, they fall over. Everybody knows that. most trees, most plants, most living things have a larger and more extensive root system than what we get to see above the ground. That's not true for every plant, but usually we see, if we see an oak tree, we're like, wow, look at the size of that thing. It's reaching way, way, way up into the air. Look at how high it is. And we know, well, it must be going at least that far down. It has to be, or else it would fall over. The wind, the rain, the snow would knock it over, blow it over, weight it down. We need very, very, very deep roots before we can extend big leaves. We need firm connections to the dark earth. And so if I think my spiritual path is about reaching for the light, you get it. I don't have to finish that sentence. I just want branches, right? I just want branches. There's birds up there. There's light up there. There's clouds up there. There's deer. There's bunnies. If I go down, then I find worms. And it's cold. And it's dark. And I don't see. And I'm scared. And I can't do just one of these things. I can't. If your practice is disconnected from your suffering, it is not real practice. We are not here to escape from our suffering. You can't. We're here to illuminate it. We're here to understand it. We're here to feel it. We're here to befriend it. Pain is showing up telling you incredibly important things about what you are, about what it is to be alive. If your goal is to ignore those, how much of your life have you just amputated? How far can you go? How far can you go? Why did we evolve as beings who can feel pain? Is that a mistake? Is that some sort of evolutionary error that I get cold when it's cold and too hot when it's too hot? And when I burn myself in the stove, my hand gives me an ouch! No. That's my contact point with reality. There's something incredibly important happening right now. There's something incredibly important happening right now. Wow. Zazen, as defined by turning the light to shine within and returning to the root, is an entirely different world than Zazen as intended to stop thinking, escape from body, go someplace else, escape from. Right? One is very up and out. We really misunderstand enlightenment when we think it's up and out. We really misunderstand enlightened people if they are the ones who don't feel pain. That doesn't even make sense, does it? I hope you don't have that map in your head. I talk about this a lot because I had that map. I just had that map. I just figured, well, Buddha must just not have suffered, and that's the goal, is to not suffer. Therefore, anything that looks like suffering, you go away from, because that's not enlightenment. Do you kind of get it? Like, isn't that interesting? So that when pain shows up, that's a sign of me doing it wrong. I'm moving away from enlightenment. So when suffering shows up on the cushion, and pain shows up on the cushion, and fear shows up on the cushion, and greed shows up on the cushion, and my own delusion shows up on the cushion, and my own heartbreak and my own grief shows up on the cushion. Okay, where's my breath? Where's my breath? Where's my breath? Do you feel the fear there? This is my fear. I'm scared of the part of me that's suffering, because I'm not here to do that. I'm here to get enlightened. I'm supposed to move the opposite direction. Jeez Louise, I mean, Buddha was super, super, super chill all the time. Wow, he had to have been. Wow. That's what I want. I want to hurt less. Of course I want to hurt less. Everybody wants to hurt less. I just fundamentally misunderstood the direction you're supposed to go. I was lucky to have kind teachers who said, you know, that's telling you something really important about your life. You know that sadness that shows up? That fear that shows up? The part of you that needs to squirm but doesn't want to squirm because you're afraid other people are going to notice that you're squirming and they're going to think less of you? Do you see how important that is? Do you see how it's telling you something really important about what formed you? That's your karma. There's something really important showing up about your life right there. There's not an enemy in the Zendo. Is there something you can do to get closer to that and understand what that is? Right? What they were teaching me, my kind teachers, was compassion. Suffering is showing up, so please meet it with kindness. Suffering is showing up, will you please meet it with kindness? Suffering is showing up, will you please meet it with kindness? They're teaching me what enlightenment actually is, because they saw that I misunderstood that enlightenment looked like not having that, and if I did have that, escaping from it fully. Reaching for the light. They saw me for years reaching for the light, reaching for the light, reaching for the light, reaching for the light. I'm not shining the light in, am I? Because I misunderstand. Right? Very patient they were. Very kind. Thank goodness, right? You're safer than you think. You get to go into that place. You're safer than you think. You are the source. You are the light. You get to do this. Wow. Rumi's bar is really high here. And yet, we reach it just like that. All it takes is a moment of kind attention. Just a moment. Just a breath of kind attention. Oh, I see it. There it is. There it is. I've read some stories over the years, like a lot of us have, about Katagiri Roshi, our founder here at MZMC. And I wrote myself some notes here, but what I'm confessing to you folks is I did not take the time to dig up the original sources. I'm not an academic, thank goodness. I'm just not. I say thank goodness because that's the kind of that detail work is really hard for me. People who are detail oriented always seem to have a superpower that that I do not have. But four stories showed up in my memory around Katagiri as expressions of his relationship with suffering, and I think they're interesting. So I'm just going to give you my memory of what they were. I'm not claiming any of this is historically true, but I think these stories are probably familiar to most of us. One is a story, this must have been a student witnessing this, that in the San Francisco Zen Center, when he was first working with Suzuki Roshi, most of the folks they were dealing with, the Americans that they were dealing with who were wanting to actually practice Zen, who were actually wanting to do the sitting, were hippies, you know, beats and hippies, right? Tim's talked about this so much over the years. And we've read about that era, unwashed, unshaven, smelly, crazy, that kind of thing. Wow, there's a challenging audience, right, for somebody raised in a Japanese culture. And all I remember from the story is the student seeing him crying, seeing Katagiri Roshi crying because he couldn't get to compassion. He's watching his own judgmentalness. He's watching his own anger. He's watching his own revulsion at some of these people and going, my vow is to love all of them, and I'm not getting there right now. I keep getting in my own way. Does that kind of make sense? Like, I really want to connect to you. I want to love you, and I'm watching myself not be able to do that because I can't get past my pain around this. Damn, take a shower. Get a haircut so I can love you. You kind of get it? I mean, that actually sounds like most relationships. If you would just change slightly, I'd love you. You're so close. You're so close. Why don't I write a few things down for you? All right. We call that control. The reason I like this story is because of his tears. He knows it's not them. He watches himself wanting to change them. And he knows that's not it. It's not the barrier. You can love somebody who doesn't take a shower. He knows that. And he's letting himself feel the sadness. He's going down. Right? That light is shown within, because he sees how often it's shown without. If only you would, and then going, oh, I see what's happening, I can't get to it, and I'm really sad about that. That's just a really honest human thing. It's a really honest human reaction. I've also read, and I think read, or at least been told, that during the war, when he was still in Japan before he came here, service in the military was mandatory, and he had to work on planes, war planes. And I have it in my head, folks, this is in Andrea Martin's biography of Katagiri Roshi that's on our website. That's about an 85% chance I'm correct. But working on those planes would frequently cause him to weep because he knew what he was doing. Does that make sense? It's just sort of like your job is to work on a warplane to make sure it flies well, and everybody knows what a warplane is for, and so here he is. Right? So, That's interesting, isn't it? He feels the disconnect between his aspiration and what's happening, and he cries for it. He allows himself to feel that. I also think a lot of one of my very favorite stories about Katagiri Roshi is him meeting with his student, and the student saying some version of, "Oh, my wife and I started fighting the other day in the kitchen, and right in the middle of the fight I went, 'Hold on a minute, hold on a minute, I know what I can do right here. Give me a half an hour,' and he ran down to the end of the hallway and closed the door and set his timer and did 30 minutes of Zazen. And then the timer went off and he was done, and then he ran back and he said, 'Yes, I diffused the whole argument using Zazen.'" And he's reporting this back to Katagiri Roshi. And we're all thinking what he's thinking, which is, he's about to get a pat on the back. "All right! Well done, you rock star! That's friggin' awesome." And Katagiri Roshi is exactly the opposite. "Don't use Zazen that way. It's not what you expect him to say. Don't use it that way." You can see the mechanism there, right? I use spiritual practice to safely escape from real-life pain. I use my spiritual practice to distance myself from the conflict with my wife. I felt it a lot less. Do you get it? The admonition would have been, no, you don't. You go right back into that crucible. That's where your life is. There's something incredibly important happening in that room right now with you and her. You better figure out what that is. In real time, right inside of it. This guy described, as I would have, as a lot of us do, "I reached for the light. Right, I left the dark and I went to the..." And no. This is where Zazen happens, folks. In the dark. That's where it happens. The light doesn't need light. The light is light. The dark is what needs light. That circumstance, that pain, is what needs that light. Do you understand? You have to go back there. Can you please go back there? I know you don't want to go back there. Right, but Zazen isn't running down the hall getting away from anything. It's the opposite of that. It has to be the opposite of that, or else we're not doing any good. Or else my enlightenment is defined as really effectively escaping from anything that hurt. Morphine does that too. Is that enlightenment? No, it is not. When we go places, we take ourselves along, don't we? Isn't that a bummer? Isn't that brilliant? Any of us who have ever tried a geographical cure to any of our problems? "Oh, you're the problem. If I just safely escape from you, problem solved. Oh, wow, I drank a lot when I lived in Milwaukee. If I move out of Milwaukee, problem solved." Right? We know this. We know this doesn't work. We know this. We bring ourselves with. Don't use Zazen that way. And then finally, a story I've talked about before that a lot of us have talked about is Katagiri Roshi's talking to a woman who is actively grieving. Very actively grieving for her young husband who had died, and asking him why did this person I love have to die? And this gentle, I like to think gentle, redirection that Roshi offered her, which is, the why is extra. The why is extra. I see the motion. I see that here in your chest you hurt. And I see now you're moving up here, 12 inches north of your heart, where your ideas are. It's much safer up there, isn't it? Do you want to find a story up here that will help distance you from that suffering? I know that's what you're doing. You want to find a why. There's no why. Everybody knows this. Anybody who's ever been present at a birth, anybody in this room who's ever been present at a death, knows there's no why. You can invent one, and that's fine. And you get to add a story, that's great. Human beings are meaning-making machines. I appreciate that we're storytellers. I appreciate that we try to make meaning out of stuff. That's fine. Is there a truth and a validity and a power to that? Yeah. Is it even often helpful? Yeah, for sure. But anybody in this room who's seen something that alive and that raw, birth or death, same thing, knows there's not a why there. This is just her not wanting to be with her experience. I get that. Of course he gets that too. So the redirection is, please shine the light where it's needed. Don't escape up here. Your freedom isn't up there. No matter what story I tell you, it will not ease that pain. Please go back down. Return to the root. It's always internal. This work is always internal. So a couple years ago, no, it was more than a couple years ago, 5 years ago maybe? I don't know. There was a book that was released in the States here called The Hidden Lamp. Stories from 25 centuries of awakened women. Some of you have heard of the book? You know the book? Yes, I see some pause coming up. It's a collection of koans that feature women, and the commentary on those koans is from contemporary female Dharma teachers, right? The Hidden Lamp. It's actually, I think it's a beautiful book. I actually really recommend it. It's a diverse collection of stories, and the voices that help us explore these stories are really diverse too. It's a beautiful volume. I really like it a lot. So one of the cases from The Hidden Lamp, I'll read you real quick. When Satsujo, the great disciple of Hakuin, was old, she lost her granddaughter, which grieved her very much. An old priest from the neighborhood came and admonished her. "Why are you wailing so much? If people hear you, they will all say, 'That old lady once studied with Hakuin and was enlightened. So now why is she mourning her granddaughter so much? You should lighten up a little bit.'" You can see it coming, can't you? Good. Isn't that cool? You could be sitting here. All right, you ought to lighten up a little bit. Satsujo glared at her neighbor and scolded him. "You shaven-headed fool." I feel that, you guys. That's a deep cut, right? "You shaven-headed fool, what do you know? My tears and my weeping are better than priests' chants and incense. My tears remember every child who has died. This is me at this moment." The old priest left without a word. Yeah, you bet he did. Wow, I know this guy. I am this guy. Enlightenment doesn't cry. Right? Enlightenment doesn't feel anything. Enlightenment never hurts. If I was enlightened and my wife died or my dog died or my cat died or my granddaughter died, I would understand so completely. Ah, yes, the impermanence of all things. All is empty because the Heart Sutras told me that and I've been chanting it for 45 years. Things come in and things go out just like their breath. I feel nothing. Really? 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 Isn't it lovely that she's there to say, "My granddaughter died and I'm crying for her. I am also crying for every child who has died. This is me at this moment." She's showing this guy what enlightenment looks like. She's showing him, "I am not scared to go in to the dark. I am not scared to go in to the suffering." Or perhaps, and maybe even better, "I am terrified to go into the dark. And I am terrified to go into the suffering. But I'm doing it anyway. Because that's where the pain is. I'm sitting on the cushion cultivating medicine. Where does medicine want to go? I don't take antibiotics when I'm not infected. Medicine is for when we are sick. Medicine is when we are ailing. Compassion goes to suffering. That's what it does, like a moth to a flame. She's either frightened to go in and she goes in, or she's not scared to go in and she goes in, but she goes in. And she's showing him something incredibly important about the enlightened mind right there. This reminds me, this koan to me is very much the same dynamic that we see at the beginning of the Heart Sutra. When compassion, the voice of compassion, the embodiment of compassion, the goddess of compassion, Avalokiteshvara, goes to the wisdom, goes to the part of the tradition that represents meditation, right? Meditation. Do we all know the Heart Sutra? How we have the interaction between the two, Avalokiteshvara and Shariputra, right? Compassion and wisdom. Compassion and wisdom. If you're disconnected from me, you're disconnected. If you're disconnected from me, you've lost it. Do you understand that? Please don't do this to escape. Wow. I'm very moved by Satsujo. I'm very moved by this story. I have no idea if it's true or not. Well, it is true. I have no idea if it's historical or not. Who cares? I am moved for a number of reasons. Number one, because she's showing the Dharma there, and she's showing something really, 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 really important. But I'm also aware that in that culture at that time, she's in a power down. She's in a power down position. Because even though she's enlightened and she's a student of Hakuin, she's a female in a male-dominated society. So if he's a priest, and she's a priest, and he's a man, and she's a woman, she is in a power down. And so for her to be in the middle of grief and speaking truth to that power, that takes tremendous courage. Right? So I also honor him for leaving without a word. I don't know what that was actually about. I have no idea. That's what these stories are cool at doing, right? We don't actually know what's going on. We get to just inhabit them, right? But what I like to think is that he realized, oh, I'm done. Thank you. You win, right? Not win like better than, but win like you've shown me something that is true. I will withdraw because I have nothing else to say here. I came in here wanting to judge you. In fact, I did. I came in here wanting to shame you and control you, which he tried to do. She refused to do either one of those things. She spoke something very, very deeply true about her own personal experience, which also happened to be the universal experience. That's the connection she's helping us make that's so important. And this is our tie back to Rumi. Her own grief for her own granddaughter, unique to her, unique to that person, is the grief. Because her tears are for her little granddaughter, but her tears are also, as she says, my tears remember every child who has died. She's in an experience right now. We do get to call enlightenment because she's connected to all of them. It isn't just her. It's all of them. Does that make sense? There's something transpersonal there? That's what Rumi says, right? He starts off about selfhood. When we have tied ourselves to selflessness, we're delivered from selfhood. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it? That's the teaching in Buddhism of anatta, right? No self, non-self. This thing I think is limited and separate is not limited and separate. There's not separate there. We insist on separate, but it's not actually there. How do I get there? How do I understand this? How do I experience it? How do I live from that place? Oh, we'll return to the root of the root. Because it's very, very, very significant that the final word is selves. The further in you go, the more universal it becomes. There's the paradox. You return to the root of our own selves. That's where I get to touch you. It's not mine anymore. It's not mine anymore. Now it's the. My joy stops being my joy. It's just the joy. It's yours. This is how I get to go down in me and come up in you. I get to go down in me and come up in you. How else would I possibly connect to you? I go down in me and I come up in you. Return to the root of our own selves. Isn't that interesting? His acknowledging here the root of the root is everybody. The root of my root is yours too. It's not mine. I don't own it. It doesn't belong to Rumi. Doesn't belong to Buddha. Doesn't belong to anybody. It's all of ours. I go deep enough in, I find you. If I haven't found you yet, it's because I haven't gone deep enough in. Just like Satsujo says, I go into mine, and I find every child. This is me at this moment. So we call this bearing witness. We call this bearing witness. Zazen is oftentimes called bearing witness. There are retreats that are done in the Zen tradition that are about the exterior, the literal exterior world bearing witness. They will have session, sittings, retreats, bearing witness retreats. They will have the retreat at or the sitting at Dachau or on the streets of New York along with people who do not have homes who are on the margins. They'll have the retreat outside of Hormel. They will have the retreat at, right? Because this is an external movement. We're going to go outside into the world where we know suffering is actively happening, and we vow to bear witness to that with compassion for all. That's what we vow to do. But this is just an externalization, you guys, of the internal mechanism. It's symbolic because it's out, but you don't have to go there to find that suffering in you. Does that make sense? Because that's what Zazen is, bearing witness to this, the root of the root here, right? This is what Satsujo is doing. She's bearing witness to suffering inside of her own heart. And when she goes into that, she finds the big, right? We call it bearing witness. I like that term. I like observer too, but those things to me feel a little distant. Meditation's developing the observer, finding the observer, realizing I'm not my thoughts. Does that make sense? I'm not my body. I'm not my emotions. I am the observer of those things. But if we misunderstand that, it becomes something sterile and safe and distant. It becomes an observer from across the room. I see you over there, thoughts. Shut up. I see you, sadness. Sucks to be you. That's not compassion, is it? We have to be very careful with these teachings that we don't turn them into spiritual bypass, that we don't misunderstand them. No one wants to be loved from a distance. No one wants, in fact, if we have an intimate relationship with somebody, a very, very intimate relationship, we're very, very tight, we're touching them, we feel them, and they start pulling away and we start being an object of observation, we feel it. And we say, hey, what's going on? What's going on? I feel you pulling away. I feel you pulling away. That scares me. What's going on? I don't want to be loved from a distance. I don't want you to love me from a safe distance. There isn't a crying baby in the universe who wants to be understood from across the room. It's not possible. If you are understanding your suffering from across the room during Zazen, you're not doing it. That's not what this is about. So the root of the root, coming back, trusting there's something there, trusting you can do it, trusting you are that source, you are that light. You get to do both of those things. You get to do both of those things. It's what we do here. The elixir is hidden in the poison, Rumi says. The elixir is hidden in the poison, so come to the poison. And then a great line, the elixir is hidden in the poison, so come to the poison. Your enlightenment is hidden in your anger. Your freedom is hidden in your sadness. Go to it. Go to it. Go to it. All right. Well, I think that's as much as I have for you today, and I appreciate your attention. We got some time, so if folks have questions they'd like to ask or voices they'd like to offer to the room, please do. Benton.
I'm reminded of him, I've heard the Unitarian Saint, which I'm sure a lot of other players have said. This little light of mine, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine.
Yeah. You guys hear him? Everybody knows the song, This Little Light of Mine, right? Okay. That's an earworm, too. It sticks in your head, doesn't it? I love it for that reason. Yeah. The willingness to say yes to that. It's sometimes, in fact, it's oftentimes terrifying. Don't you think, to shine? Mm-hmm. To, like, let that be seen is terrifying. When Christ said, don't hide your light under a bushel, he was raising a very, very important issue. Thank you, actually. I love that song. Other folks have something today? Lily.
I was wondering, when we don't know enough about the story of the guy with his wife to know what he decided, you know, that in his meditation and when he came back. But I was wondering, do you think that if people are in a reactive mode where they're both triggered and they're going into the strategies to avoid their feelings, then you could take a way to go away from it? Get in touch with your feelings and find out what's going on there for you, and then come back from your heart, and that might be an okay way to use Zazen.
Did everybody hear that? Oh! There it is. That's exactly it. I think that's exactly it. I love that story because...
I was like, oh no, I'm doing it wrong.
Oh, there! There it is! Ooh, let's talk about that. No, I love what you're saying. That's what's neat about these stories is that we really have to understand, like, who is this teaching given to and at what stage of development were they, you know? Because the why is extra teaching could have been cruel in another, you know, right? With the wrong person at the wrong time, that would be cruel. And you're actually, I think that's exactly right. I think the reason this guy, whoever this imaginary person was, who got the admonition, don't use Zazen that way, the only assumption I can possibly make for that to be a skillful, loving thing to tell that student is, I know your pattern. I know what you do. You're going to try to escape, and you're going to try to not feel this, and you're going to try to disconnect from the truth of your life, and I don't want you to do that. But what you're saying is exactly right. The very same behavior in a different situation could be this guy actually being wise enough to go, hold on a minute, I am totally triggered. I am completely activated. I'm acting entirely out of my defenses right now. I am not skillful. I am disconnected from my heart. I am disconnected from the truth of my life. And I need to take some time to connect with something that's really important. And the word I think you use that I think is so skillful is, I need time away from this so that I can connect to me, the truth of what's going on in here. That's exactly right. Because I'm realizing that all we're doing right now is this is just a dance of defense. I'm trying to control you. You're trying to control me. Nothing's actually happening here. That's just wisdom to me. I totally get that. So this is one of those interesting stories where, I mean, the reason these things stay in my head is because the answer is the opposite of what you think, right? Which shows me, at a different stage of development, this person needs to stay in that room. You've got to stay in that room and work this thing out. I trust that you can do that. Quit using Zazen as your escape hatch, right? But what you're saying makes perfect sense. Yeah. Did that track for people? Did that make sense? Okay. Thank you. We're getting close, so we'll wrap up. But again, thank you for your attention today, and I will turn things over to Peter.